Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
I'm David Locke, host of Locked On Jazz.
And I'm DJ Foster, host of Locked On Clippers.
We cross it over today talking about two of the Western Conference teams. They will match up in the third game of the regular season and the third game of the preseason. So, and the fifth game of the preseason also. So there'll be lots of Clipper action, Jazz action early in the year. DJ, we had on Locked On NBA, I think you had this bite on Locked On Clippers, of Kevin Pelton kind of saying, yeah, we don't have the Clippers as the third best team in the West anymore. They actually, he had the Jazz in the real plus minus. Does that seem crazy to you? Do you say, ah, that might, they might be onto something? What was your reaction?
My reaction was, I wasn't upset about the Jazz being ranked where they are, because I really think they could make a leap this year, and I could see them being better than the Clippers, but I don't think that necessarily means the Clippers need to take such a big step back. Pelton had them winning, let's see, I think it was 46 games. Does that sound right?
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, so 46 games, that would be a 7-game decrease from last year, coming off a year where Blake Griffin played about half of the season. The Clippers brought everyone back this offseason. I just have a hard time seeing them drop off quite that much, and I think you do too, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's possible. They're just too good, right? I mean, Chris Paul's still just too good. Blake's still too good. I actually think J.J. Redick in my pack ratings is one of the top 10 offensive players in the league. And so I just have a hard time believing that. Now, the question is, you know, is Chris Paul slowing down? There is some point in time here where that age number is not on his side in any way here.
Yeah, I think my counter for that is that for a long time now, ever since the injuries, the knee injury, Chris Paul doesn't really get it done with athleticism and speed so much as he does with footwork and just, you know, this crazy high skill level and his intelligence. So I don't really see a big dip coming from him, even though 31, you start to think, okay, is he going to, you know, slow way down? But he's just someone who doesn't really get it done with this raw athleticism. And he's so smart that I think he'll figure out ways to still stay productive.
What's interesting about these two teams is they truly are coming from opposite directions, right? One is the superstar-laden team that's trying to hold on, and the other one's this young team that is superstar-less that's trying to build up. Here's what I asked. At the beginning of last year, I asked Doc Rivers, is there a certain point in which a collective group has too many negative experiences together? And, you know, you look back at the playoff loss to the Rockets and just some of the Warrior experiences that this Clipper group had. I kind of wondered if that was the case. And he said, yeah, that's why we changed up most of the roster, right? They had changed kind of 7 of their 14 players around their core. They didn't do that this year.
Yeah.
So the question still, I think, is there a point in which the Clippers as a unit have had too many negative experiences, from playoff losses to punching out equipment managers, that just the fabric of this group just doesn't have the, I don't know, I guess my point would be that they know the pain way too much, right? They know how much effort it takes, and they know how fleeting it can be. Is that a group that really collectively fights it out?
Right. I think it's tough because the window could very well be closing. And like you said, the Clippers have kind of been teetering on the edge of falling apart for a while now with the whole DeAndre going to Dallas thing and Blake Griffin's incident last year. And I think where it could fall apart is if Chris Paul decides this summer, where he has a player option that he can decline to become a free agent, if he decides this summer, look, I am running out of time, I'm 31 years old, I might not have a very big window left, do I really want to tie myself to Blake Griffin going forward? It hasn't worked out, we've had all these negative experiences, like you said, for some reason we just can't get it done, do I look to head somewhere else? And I think that's the one place where this can all kind of fall apart.
It's interesting because the opposite is the Jazz, who, talking to Quinn Snyder yesterday and at the end of the interview, which is up on Locked on NBA, there was this kind of moment in time in which at the end you could kind of get what his biggest fear is. And his biggest fear is that for the first time ever, this group has 10 players that are capable of closing games in different ways. And so how is a Derek Favors or Rudy Gobert going to react if we go small and Joe Johnson closes? How are they going to react if a Boris Diaw closes? How is a Rodney Hood going to react if George Hill and Dante Exum close with Gordon Hayward? How, you know, this is this group that never has had enough competition for someone to close, and you've got a group that's dealing with almost too much familiarity. I'm just tired of being with you.
It is a completely opposite situation, right? And I think that is a good point. Depth is kind of a double-edged sword sometimes because, right, you got to find ways to get guys to put their egos aside, and you know, starters that think they're going to finish the game aren't always going to close out the game. Do you think the Jazz have the best bench in the league this year?
Well, that's what CBS Sportsline said, and it's such an – or not CBS Sportsline. Wow, I dated myself. Sorry, Zach Harper and Matt Moore. CBSSports.com. And that was Zach's piece. I actually hope to have him on Locked on NBA next week because he's done a bunch of great stuff this offseason.
Love that.
But he wrote that. It's hard for me to believe that because, frankly, they might have had the worst bench this side of Philadelphia in the league last year. I mean, they really might have. Like, I'm not trying to beat – I love our guys. I'm not trying to beat out them. But the bench last year was Shelvin Mack, who'd been cut.
Right.
Chris Johnson, who's been cut four times.
Right.
Joe Ingles, who'd been cut three times.
Oh, I love Joe Ingles.
We all love Joe Ingles, but the Clippers cut him, and that's how we got him. And the Warriors cut him the year before that, and that's how the Clippers got him.
Clippers should have never cut him.
Jeff Withey, who the Pelicans decided to keep Omer Asik and Alexis Ajinsa instead of. Right, that was your bench, and Trey Lyles, who was a rookie.
Yeah.
And Howell Neto, who was a second-round draft pick, if wasn't you're on your bench, then he was starting. So that was after everybody got hurt, that was the bench last year. And, they did okay, but that might have been the worst bench in the NBA. Now to tell me you have the best bench?
It's just you can't wrap your head around it this quickly.
Give me the Clipper perspective. You have this veteran-laden superstar. Like the SI.com is doing top 20 players in the NBA. You're going to have three of them.
Yeah.
We have none of them. Why does anyone think that the Jazz could compete with the Clippers if the Clippers have three of the top 20 players in the NBA?
Right. That's a good question. I think defensively is why you're so excited about the Jazz, the potential they have. They have a legit one of the top five rim protectors in basketball, maybe the best rim protector in basketball, in Rudy Gobert. You got Derek Favors, who's a stud at the four, who seems to get better every single year. I mean, there's size, there's quickness. You can do everything with them defensively. You had a good defensive point guard in George Hill. There's no weak points defensively, right, with this unit. You got Rodney Hood on the wing, who's young and athletic. I mean, they could legitimately be the best defense in the NBA this upcoming season. So I think when you look at potential playoff teams in the West and you try and map it out, where are you going to put one of the best defensive teams? You got to put them at the top four, right? How often do we see a top five defense not be a top four team in the conference?
Well, this is what was interesting talking to Quinn. If you listen to the interview on Locked on NBA, is I felt this tug of war going inside of him, like we're a defensive team, we're a defensive team, we're a defensive team. And yet for the first time, he has all these lineups he can put out there that are entirely offensive.
Right.
Right? George Hill, Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward, Joe Johnson with Derek Favors or Boris Diaw as your center. Guard it. Guard that.
Right.
Trey Lyles is your four with Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward. Okay, even Alec Burks come. Like Dante Exum and George Hill with Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward is your four. He's 235 now.
Yeah, he can handle it.
Right? Like, I mean, there's all of these lineups that he now has that he can play with that are simply I think they're offensive lineups, and how does he stick to making sure that he has a lineup that's a defensive lineup with Gobert, Favors, and the guys you mentioned?
Right.
I think that's the interesting one. It's probably similar to a little bit of the game Doc has to play, where Doc has this offense that's been top five in the NBA every year, and yet he knows the game is going to a spread game, and he's not spread.
Right. Yeah, I think here's the thing with the Jazz that I want to know. What team do you think they're going to emulate the most? Like, they got some Spurs in there now, former Spur, George Hill. They got Boris Diaw in there. It's going to be really interesting what kind of style they play with, though, right? Because they've always been slow, walk it up, and in some sense they'll still need to have, like, a heavily scripted game flow. I'm just curious to see who they play the most like. What do you think?
I think they're the Atlanta, if all works right, they're the Atlanta Hawks of 2 years ago.
Okay.
Right? And,
okay.
You start looking at the Hawks' win total and where they made that big jump. Now, that's a 60-win team. I don't think I can honestly project that, because that had to do with an Eastern Conference that was horrendous that allowed that to happen as well. The other thing that I think is unique to that Hawks team, and this is where I think the Jazz are going to head, and sorry, I'm pulling this up kind of as we speak, is that Hawks team made a enormous, with Kyle Korver and Damari Carroll, and then adding Paul Millsap's three-point shooting, they made a big jump in what percentage of threes they took. They took the fourth most amount of threes that year. At the time, it was 32%. In 14-15, by the way, I think that 32% would rank you 8th or 9th last year. The Jazz last year took 28% of their shots as threes. I suspect that this year the Jazz take about 33% of their shots as threes.
Okay, so who are you crediting the uptick with? Joe Johnson will shoot some threes.
George Hill will shoot some threes.
George Hill will shoot some threes.
Gordon and Rodney just have more. There's just going to be more space on the floor. They've been playing with non, you know, they were 15, they were 14th in the league in 3-point shots last year. Percentage of shots taking is three. I think they get in that top five, and actually that top five has to be 35%. I just think they're able to, you know, their stretch fours were Derek Favors and Trevor Booker.
Yeah, right. Trevor Booker, great player, great hustle guy, not a stretch four.
So that's, you know, I think that's where it comes. I mean, what's unique to the Clippers is everyone talks about they don't stretch, but they shot 32.5% of their shots last year as threes.
Yeah.
So they may not stretch because of Blake, but they're bombing. And the Jazz will be able to stretch if they want to and should be able to bomb. I think I think Rodney's going to – and Gordon are going to launch more than five a game. I think George Hill's going to launch more than five a game. And then you come off with Joe Johnson bombing four or five off the corner three, and Trey Lyles is a three-point shooter, and Boris Diaw. Right. I think they're going to shoot a tremendous amount of threes. And frankly, if anyone hasn't noticed, you have to. If you look at the eight teams that took the highest percentage of their possessions that shot threes last year, they all made the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? 10 of the top 12, and the Warriors were second, and the Cavaliers were third, and the only team that's higher is the Rockets, and they're jacking with the game.
Right. Bad teams just don't create those looks.
That's a good one. Yeah, right.
They just don't create them as often, right? I mean, you got to have someone who can break down a defense, who can make guys collapse, and then you kick out, and you can play drive and kick basketball. Bad teams have a really hard time doing that.
You know, that's Quinn talks about pace of play, and I think Quinn's big point of pace of play, and we're so slow in pace of play, is because we don't have the guys to do exactly what you just said.
Yeah,
like, right. We're pushing the ball ahead. Who's just beating their guy?
Right, right. You almost have to have a way more scripted offense when you don't have that dribble, penetrate, slash, and kick sort of guy.
Right, and George Hill's, truthfully about George Hill, George Hill's not that guy.
No, absolutely not.
Rodney Hood is probably the best of that.
Yeah.
But it's methodical. It's old. It's the old Brandon Roy style of doing it.
Right, and his is coming off of, you know, a closeout or something like that. He's not necessarily ISOing his man and going to work, right?
Right. Hey, Big DJ, Time with DJ Foster of Locked On Clippers. I'm David Locke of Locked On Jazz. Make sure you check out all of the Locked On podcast network. NBA shows this week have all been crossovers. Next week, we're formatting the shows. Mondays, we're going to talk about the point guards on our teams. Tuesday, the shooting guards. Wednesday, the small forwards. Thursday, the bigs. Friday, believe it or not, we'll be prepping you for training camp because media day for most teams is that next Monday, and we'll be rolling on that. So make sure you grab all that. If you're a football fan, there's a tremendous amount of content led by Matt Williamson's Locked On the NFL.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Let's go to the league wide for a second. I want just your perspective on the West. It feels like there is this, there's this surge up. Minnesota, Utah, maybe Denver, according to Kevin Pelton, maybe Sacramento if DeMarcus doesn't go bat, whatever. And then there's these teams clinging: Memphis, Dallas.
Yeah.
I don't think the Spurs and the Clippers are quite clinging on.
They should be safe.
They should be safe. What's your guess on kind of which of the young teams make the entire jump up to being, you know, into that group, I guess, probably playoff group is what I'm talking about, and which of those groups that are clinging, the Dallas, Memphis, I don't know what your thought on Houston is,
yeah,
you know, fall back and don't and aren't able to maintain.
I'm intrigued.
Oklahoma City's probably a clinger, even though they have Russell.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Houston's really interesting to me. I think they're a clinger too, but if they can somehow manage to stay healthy, they might score 120 points a game.
Well, go to your, what did you say earlier? If you're top five defensively, you're in the top four. What happens if you're top five offensively?
Right, right. Maybe you end up like seventh in the conference. I think they're just barely hanging on. I think if I had to pick one team to fall out of that group, as much as it pains me to say it, probably Dallas. 42-40 last year, getting older. I never bet against Rick Carlisle. Like, ever, ever, ever. I think he's a brilliant coach. He always kind of sort of finds a way to take these veteran hodgepodge teams and make them competitive and make them, you know, playoff contenders. But I think eventually, maybe Dirk gets hurt. Maybe he just completely falls off. Eventually, they're going to be below 500. This might be the year where they float underneath. I think that would be the one team that I would pick to take a step back. I think Memphis is safe. I think Houston could surprise some people, so I would choose Dallas there.
I don't feel that way on Memphis, by the way.
You don't?
No, I don't get Memphis right now. So, one is offensively they're not very good.
Yeah.
The only thing actually I hear about Memphis is people are raving about Dave Fizdale, raving about him. Memphis, they're not very good offensively. If you really kind of dig into the numbers, and I run my pack rating on them, they're not exceptional. They might have a star in Marc Gasol, but I've attested this for a long time. Mike Conley is not underrated. He's appropriately rated.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. He's not an all-star point guard. That's exactly who he is. He's really, really good. He's not an all-star. But they're not, like, that team's not particularly, like, efficient anymore. Zach Randolph's become a below-average offensive player. Marc Gasol last year was a below-average offensive player. Mike Conley last year was a below-average offensive player. They're not – and then – so what is their calling card? Their calling card is defense with a 35-year-old Zach Randolph and a 35-year-old Tony Allen, and they have no bench. Have you looked at their depth chart? Oh, my goodness gracious.
They've got some interesting names on their bench, for
like
sure.
You, I mean, like, they're a pain in the ass. You've got to, like, take an extra hour and prep them. You've never heard of some of these guys. And so I don't think Memphis is good this year. I mean, Tony Roten, Vince Carter, James Ennis, Jamichael Green, and Brandon Wright?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what happens? Dallas clearly has done their medical and thinks that Chandler Parsons' leg's going to fall apart. And there's a chance that Portland did it too, by the way. Nobody's talked about this. But Portland had him all but signed up and let him go. So maybe they did the same medical.
Yeah.
So he gets hurt. Who's playing in place of Chandler Parsons?
DJ Stephens? Yeah,
Tony Allen is not playing 82 games anymore.
No, yeah, those days are done. Those days are done.
Mike Conley and Marc Gasol were hurt last year. Their backups are Tony Roten, Wade Baldwin, or Deontay Davis.
Right, and you don't know how Gasol's going to look after that injury either.
So I Memphis is the team that, honestly, I just think has these names that we're comfortable with and has very – like when they signed Chandler Parsons, I was like, oh, that's incredible. And then I started digging into it. I was like, no, it's not.
Okay, here's the counter-argument, though. 42-40 last year, and that roster that they finished the season with had to be one of the worst playoff rosters of all time. Right? I mean, it was just a complete group of these D-League guys. They're pulling from everywhere. Just a total mash unit that they brought to a 500 record in a playoff berth. So with Gasol and Conley back healthy, and if Parsons can give you 60 games, it's hard to see them taking a big step back, right? No?
It's going to be interesting to watch. I hear exactly what you're saying. I think Minnesota's a playoff team.
Do you? See,
I think Carl Anthony Towns is one of the 10 best players in the NBA. Understand where I'm coming from. I think he's a complete franchise-changing player. In his second year in the league, they will just win games because of him.
He's incredible. But I'm a little worried that we're hyping him up to be better than he is. Right now, we're doing the thing that we do when we get an exciting rookie in the league, where we don't look at any of his flaws. And we've seen this with multiple guys. Anthony Davis had it happen. We all expected, oh, they're a playoff team just by way of Anthony Davis being there. Blake Griffin had it happen where everyone, you know, thought, oh, he's the best, and then they start picking on his flaws. And when he can't bring his team up to the competitive level, they start knocking him down a peg. So I'm a little worried that may happen to Towns, but I agree. Out of that group, I mean, he has one of the best overall skill sets I've seen from a young player in a long, 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 long time.
When he was being drafted, my comment was, I could probably find it and play it, but my comment was that he will win, and he's going to win MVPs when we get bored voting for Anthony Davis.
Wow.
And I was wrong, because Anthony Davis is going to win MVPs when we're bored voting for Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. You're all in.
Oh, I think he's – yeah, I'm all in. I'm beyond all in. I think he'll be a top five. I mean, I could run my numbers right now. I think he was a top 10 offensive player in my numbers last year in the NBA.
So you got Minnesota making the playoffs. You got Memphis falling back. Anybody else falling out?
And Dallas falls out. So Utah and Memphis get in. And Utah and Minnesota get in.
Yeah. Yeah, I could easily see that. I think out of the teams to get in, I think Utah is pretty close to a lock. Minnesota is a little bit of a tougher sell, but I don't think any of those Phoenix isn't there. Denver's not quite ready yet, but I do like the potential they have on that roster. And Sacramento, I just have zero faith in Sacramento to ever figure it out.
The most efficient offense players I had, the best offense players in the league last year, I had Steph, then Durant, then Harden, then Kawhi, then J.J. Redick, then Klay Thompson, then LeBron, then Whiteside, then DeAndre Jordan, so Clipper fans of note.
JJ and DeAndre.
Actually, then Enes Kanter.
Wow.
Well, the dude shot 60% from the field last year.
That's true.
And then Carl Anthony Towns.
Wow. Yeah, as a rookie, too.
As a rookie. If Carl Anthony Towns improves like I think he will be then in the Steph, Durant, Harden, Kawhi, JJ Redick, Klay Thompson, LeBron, Hassan Whiteside category. Every single one of these players I mentioned, by the way, made the playoffs other than Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
And if you keep going, we undervalue the big that can dunk. Jonas Valanciunas, Dwight Howard are the next two. So the top 16 offensive player, or top 13 offensive players, only one who didn't make it in the playoffs was Carl Anthony Towns. That's why they'll make the playoffs this year.
Okay, I like it. And you got Thibs there, so you think the defense is going to be a lot better. A young core, Ricky Rubio, good defender. Andrew Wiggins is making strides. Yeah, I could easily see it.
And I think Houston will be good. I think Houston will be a top five offensive team. They got to cut Corey Brewer. That's the only thing they got to do. Get rid of Corey Brewer, they'll be fine.
Corey Brewer, not an efficient shot.
Oh, God. Jeez, Louise. I know he runs well, but get him off the floor.
He runs very well.
Just right. But what happens when we're not running on that possession? DJ, keep up the great work on Locked On Clippers. Love to have you on the show. Great to have you on the network. This has been a crossover between Locked On Jazz and Locked On Clippers. Thank you to all of our sponsors. If you want to advertise on either program, I'll set you up with DJ. Just email me at dlock09@gmail.com. We'd love to have you. This has been a production of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Babe, I'll hit the game winner. It's not over, babe. I'll hit the game winner. Baby, believe in me. I'll hit the game winner.